Coming up today on the Domversations podcast.
What's really interesting is the self-mastery work, because what that really focuses on, and what I help people with when I teach it now, is to identify these old conditioned patterns that we have that keep us in a loop that's keeping the hormones of stress in our body.
Welcome to another episode of Domversations. Today we have Carol Mirko. Hello, Carol. It's so good to see you.
Dawn, it's such a pleasure to be here. I love the whole concept of your podcast and you already.
I just need everybody to know that has not heard of you or doesn't know. Like, I looked your name up. I thought, you know, I don't really delve in too much to try and find people's backgrounds, because I want it to be fresh and just, you know, like, yeah, I'm getting to know you just as my listeners or viewers are. But I was like, am I talking to the right Carol? Because I was looking up and there was like, you were doing cooking shows and there were all these different things that you've done. And I'm like, is this her? And it was your face every time. So I'm like, okay, she has a huge background. So you were doing television, you were doing cooking show type of things. And then you got something, a disease in your eyes. Is that where everything turned?
Pretty much. I mean, I'll just kind of just give you a little more.
Yeah, go for it.
Thing. So yes, I mean, I'm 60. I have a lot under my belt already. I spent 15 years in financial services. I fought a sexual harassment suit and then moved to the country, became a stepmom, and had to reinvent myself out in the country. And that's sort of when the cooking thing happened, because I always loved cooking, and I grew up in a 3-generation household, Italian household. And I took a career workshop called Getting to Next, because I just thought, gosh, I keep hopping from one thing to the next, and what's wrong with me? And the best thing that happened out of that workshop was the woman who ran it was just like, you just have many motors, Carol. You just have many motors. And she's like, you know, a lot of people can just get on one track and they're happy and that's that. But she said, you're curious, and you have the capacity to do many things. And so good for you for not just kind of going, well, I should just do the safe track, right? And that's basically been my life, is just listening to that little voice in me and not turning it off. But that didn't mean that it didn't carry some trauma for me, because, you know, it was traumatic. Ask me what I do, right? I could never answer the question. I was like, oh my God, these people are going to think I'm crazy. And then I basically just said, I do a lot of things. I have a lot of motors. As soon as I went to that thing, anyway, she gave me permission to focus on the motor of cooking, because I thought, I have all this education. How can I go back to this basic thing that I learned when I was a little girl? Right. Mm-hmm. And then I just decided that I would go all in. And, you know, I had a radio show on local NPR station, and then produced a couple, some public television shows. But what happened after all of that was these eye symptoms just showed up. What the heck? It's called birdshot chorioretinopathy. It was like there was a million floaters in my eyes. And it was scary. I never panicked. I don't even know if I ever cried, right? It was sort of like, okay, this is my next. And I'm going to explore what it is. I'm going to listen to the Western model. But I always was like, I've got to explore everything else too, because I knew enough just from cooking and from all my own curiosity about life that there was a million other modalities out there.
Right, right.
And that I needed to explore all of them and not just limit myself. And because I was also really into food and I understood that food was medicine, and I also knew that there were lots of toxins in our foods and in our environment and all of this other stuff. And I thought, well, I've got to do radical things now. I have to really understand, you know, functional nutrition, right? And so I went to and got my health coaching certification and wanted to understand which foods were anti-inflammatory and that sort of thing. And then everything just sort of started showing up. It's like a shaman shows up. I was like, okay, we'll work with you for a while. And then and acupuncture, which I had never done. And then I met this magical acupuncturist, and she just, I remember she worked on me and right after I was diagnosed, and she's like, I've never worked on anybody that was more depleted. And I thought to myself, I would never have described myself as depleted, but from the Chinese medical perspective, it's that I depleted a lot of my inner ability to heal, right? So I must have just worked, I was doing too much. My motors, I had too many motors going.
You needed a new engine.
It turns out I had the gene for the disease and all this other stuff. Anyway, as I was migrating through the whole Western model, though, the disease is an orphan disease, and so there's not a lot of research on it. And so what happens is that I became a human guinea pig with, you know, different drug cocktails and all this other stuff. And so my eyes weren't getting any better, but I was getting sick from all the drugs. And I just one day decided, I was actually on Nantucket and I was walking on the beach, and I just had a download. And I was like, you're done with that. You're not going back. You're going to heal yourself. And that was in 2018. I have not stepped foot at Mass Eye and Ear since then. I took myself off of all of the drugs. Everything I've been doing has basically, I activated my own inner healing and all my symptoms are gone. And so I started kept doing more and more certifications. And the things that really helped me were meditation. And in particular, I studied with Dr. Joe Dispenza initially as just going to his retreats and reading his books. And then I had such profound experiences with meditation that I got certified to teach his work. And then I also really been interested in the martial arts. So when I was in my 30s, I was a student of Kung Fu. And so I understood that there was this medical martial art called Qigong. And so I pursued finding Qigong school that I thought was really interesting. And we had COVID. And then all of a sudden, these masters were teaching online, which they never would have done. I would have had to travel and everything. So I ended up getting certified to teach Qigong and also use that for my healing. And then the food thing was always front and center with me anyway. So I was able to change what I was eating and how I was eating. Like even salads, I learned through traditional Chinese medicine, are cold foods, and that our digestion really needs to have warmth to work. Like iced drinks, all that kind of stuff is terrible for your digestion, at least really? According to Chinese medicine.
Yes.
And I believe that because, you know, our stomach is warm, right? And and if you put something cold in there, you could imagine those digestive juices just sort of going, oh, you know, I had to work harder. So mm-hmm. when they have to work harder, then that's depleting energy. And the other thing that I've learned both through meditation and traditional Chinese medicine is that, you know, we spend easily 70 to 80% of our time in stress, and it's subconscious, right? I mean, because stress has been so normalized in society. Mm-hmm. And you know what happens when we're in stress? Our pupils dilate, our stomach juices just stop working, because all of the focus is to run, fight, or hide. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you think about all the people who have IBS or irritable bowel or mm-hmm. any of this stuff. I think the majority of it is from just stress and, you know, eating the wrong combinations of foods, and also how they think, right? What they're mm-hmm. thinking about. So that's the long kind of sort of way to get where we are now. So, but I have to say the diagnosis was probably the most profound thing that's ever happened in my life. And it's changed just about everything that.
Gosh. Isn't that crazy? So when you were doing all the radio shows and all that stuff before, did you feel like in your gut, this feels good, this is what I'm supposed to be doing? Or were you still yearning and thinking there's got to be more, there's got to be more? And then with the vision stuff coming in and you started to learn all this new stuff, where you're like, okay, now I see this is where I'm supposed to be. I mean, do you even feel that yet?
No, I feel like I have been divinely guided to what I'm doing.
Okay.
And that the universe just was just like, okay, you're paying attention, whack, 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 whack. And so we have to like, now you're going to pay attention. And what's really interesting is the self-mastery work, because what that really focuses on and what I help people with when I teach it now is to identify these old conditioned patterns that we have that keep us in a loop that's keeping the hormones of stress in our body. And I just wasn't aware of them, right? So while I was doing heirloom meals and doing the cooking thing, I mean, that was my passion love project, but I couldn't for the life of me figure out how to make money, because in PBS and NPR, you have to raise your own money. So I'm raising enough sponsor money to pay everybody else to help me produce the show. And then there's nothing for me. And I'm like, why can't I figure this out?
Right. And you're spinning your wheels.
I had a lot of stress in that, because I was working 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like a fraud, right? Because everybody would meet me and they're like, oh my God, you're so successful. This is so, and I didn't, you know what happened because of that? I created so much beauty, but I never relished it. I saw the deficit, right? What I didn't have, which was like a robust bank account.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you have to think too, does that measure success? It's not paying your bills if you're not making any money, but you were so fulfilled and it was your passion and all of that. So there's a lot to be said for that too. So I'm glad you got to experience all of that. It's just, I understand what you're saying. If the money's not there, then you're having to work other jobs so that you can make ends meet. And then I could see why you would get depleted. That makes total sense.
Yeah. But I don't know that I was aware, right? So that was my whole point. That was what was operating. And I remember when I started doing just the practices to help me heal, like the stuff that would show up when I was journaling. And I was so surprised, because I would never have understood how these negative emotions that many of us have are so subconscious and so unconscious. That, and I was addicted to frustration and disappointment on some level, right? I had such expectations for myself that I, and you don't meet them. I produced this amazing thing with heirloom meals, but because the money wasn't there, I had this underlying feelings of frustration and disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe I was even like a failure, and then embarrassed when people were like, you're so successful and blah, blah, blah. I get that success isn't money, but at that time I think it was for me,
right?
Was part of the success that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what a journey. But I gotta tell you, it's like now money is all good, but the success is in helping people evolve themselves. And And I mean, I kind of basically say that I'm just a loud voice for love now. And I help people activate their inner healer.
Yeah. You said you were journaling and meditating. And I think when we are so busy and we're used to that autopilot of go, 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 even if it's not working, we're still doing, 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 doing. And until you are allowed to stop and really go in and think about, what do I want? Why am I doing what I'm doing? And COVID did that for a lot of people. If they haven't had the opportunity before, then COVID was definitely a way for people to kind of be stopped dead in their tracks and rethink where they're at in their life. And if they want to go back to work, where it's like, I didn't even like that job anyway. I think it really made people look back and see if they're on the right path. But so fascinating to me. I want to ask you, because I want to talk about thoughts and law of attraction, all that, but really quick, When you're learning all the Chinese medicine and everything about plants and herbs and all that stuff, were you on the right path with the heirloom meals, cooking the way that your heritage, the Italians, or were you eating things that were very inflammatory and probably causing a lot of your health issues? Because, I mean, you weren't running through a drive-through. You're making everything from scratch. So you think of that as healthy, but was it healthy?
I'm going to say that, well, a couple of things. A, my husband was diagnosed with celiac disease in 2006. So I was already a gluten-free household. So, but what's interesting is that a lot of gluten-free stuff is very unhealthy and very inflammatory. It's fascinating, right? Because everybody's like, but I'm eating gluten-free. And it's like, yeah, but they do like mimic taking out gluten, then they're adding in all these like stuff like that's not
fake
healthy.
Stuff.
So I really like, so we were already on a very healthy track that way. But truth be told, I have been a cheeseaholic.
It's just so good.
So good. And I think that definitely impacted my digestion, right? I mean, if there was nothing wrong with cheese, at least, I mean, I think I would just eat cheese and sourdough bread for the rest of my life.
A lot of people would do that. It's not just you.
I'd say we were very, very healthy in terms of our diet. I mean, I have a big vegetable garden. I was buying organic food for years and years and years. And I think even doing heirloom meals, I was very much on the pulse of, the farm to table movement and the buy local movement. And so I was even was on the board. I live in the Berkshires in Western Mass. And so I was on the board of Berkshire Crone, which is an organization that whose mission was to keep farmers farming. And so really actively buying, very, hyper local food and meats and all that stuff. So I really think that the hierarchy of health is, it starts with your thoughts. And so you are what you think, and then you are what you eat. And I do believe that for me, it was probably typical, at least, from now that I talk to a lot of women, so many of us are, there's like some self-loathing and all this, because we grew up and we're, are you thin enough? Are you pretty enough? And
accomplished.
All of that stuff, right? That just underneath the surface, we just didn't ever, even though with all the accomplishments, and I can't tell you, I know people who run major companies and still feel like they're imposters. And I think it's how we were conditioned as little girls becoming young women. And I'm hoping it's changing, but I think had a big impact on my own self-love or self-worth. And that's the stuff that shifted in me right now. It's just like, okay, this work is really all about self-love.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
You gotta love yourself first.
Yeah. And we have such a hard time with that. And I don't know why that is, because you would never allow anyone to talk to you the way that you talk to yourself. And those thoughts just keep going and going and going and going. And like, oh my gosh, if somebody was talking to one of my friends or my mom or my sister that way, I would be like, hey, but I'll look in the mirror and be like, what the heck is your hair? Why are you? Yeah, I can't believe you went out like that. Or what are you wearing?
Yeah, exactly.
Why do we do that? Why do we do that? I don't know.
We're conditioned to do it. What do we, ever since we were little, what do we see? Airbrushed models, right?
Yeah.
Perfection. And so we are falling short of that perfection. So we just look at ourselves and we're like, well, why can't I look like that? I don't think we're even consciously aware that we're doing that to ourselves. Yeah. So I do think society's done a job on us. And I think that it's not just modern society. I have a feeling it's as a result of centuries of.
Right. Yes.
And now I believe that we're all being tapped to wake up and bring the divine feminine into the forefront and balance out the very masculine world that we've been in. I mean, war. I mean, all that kind of stuff. It's like women don't start wars. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, true. I mean, unless you go to an all-girls school.
I went to Smith. So like we
you know what I mean though. You know, girls can just be terrible to other girls. Women can be terrible to other women. It's like you never outgrow it. Yeah.
Because they're taught to be. We're taught that we're competition for each other from men, right? For positions, because there weren't a lot of positions, you know, in the corporate world, up the corporate ladder, because one, we're taking them away from men, and now we have to compete with the women for those jobs. And now I believe that women are coming around to the fact that, at least maybe in my circles, or maybe it's because I'm looking to create that, is, you know, we don't compete with each other anymore, right? It's just like we hold each other up. And I'll tell you, when you get to that point in your relationships with other women, it's just like magic, because we all want to see each other
thrive. Yes, 100%. And I think what a lot of that is, like you said, in your circle, and I have my group of friends is like that. There's more of us out there than we're led to believe. There's more of us out there that are really rooting for each other than the ones that are ready to be out there tearing people down. So that gives us some hope. There's hope out there. Lots of hope.
I might be a Pollyanna these days, but I think that so many, just like you said, you have your pockets, I have my pockets, and your friends have their pockets, right?
Right.
I just have faith that because this is happening, that we're somehow being tapped on some level to be light workers in our own way and to raise the consciousness of the planet. And that I truly believe, even though it looks kind of dark out there and it looks very still heavily weighted to older men, I do feel like we are going to witness a shift, and that what's going to fill the void is us, right? Our love,
right?
Our women's voices and the divine, and it's not going to be ruled by the divine feminine. We're just going to have the balance between masculine and feminine, which is what we need.
Right. And it starts with us personally, ourselves, not necessarily our peers. And if we are all building ourselves up and feeling good about ourselves, that's contagious. That is contagious. Then all of a sudden people are like, I want to be around them more because they are always happy and they've got good things going on. And yeah, I love it. I think you're right. I feel it. I feel that women are starting to feel really empowered because they're starting to love themselves more, no matter what their shape is, no matter how far they've made it in college, how many children they'd had or didn't have, all of that. I think people are starting to become proud of themselves on that level, and that can only promote positivity. So I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. And just think of the healing that is for going back generations and going forward, right? Mm-hmm. That we're not going to carry those wounds anymore. And that we really step into, like you said, our power in the sense of, and I think our power is love, right? Nurturing. And
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so let's talk about the way that we think. What would you say, without giving all of your secrets away, what would you say is a good place for someone to start that needs to start rethinking the way that they think? Way to start training their brain to not go to the negative space.
The first step is awareness. People think that, well, if I just think positive, everything is going to change. But the problem is that our bodies have become both conditioned and habituated over time into thought patterns. And 70% of the time, we, you know, statistically spend our time having negative thoughts. And let me just give you a few other statistics. So we have 60 to 70,000 thoughts a day. 90% of those thoughts are the same. Of those thoughts, 70% of them produce the hormones of stress.
Gosh.
And so when you know you have that many thoughts, you realize that most of them are subconscious or unconscious thoughts.
Yeah, because you don't realize you're thinking them.
Exactly. So the reason why I say awareness then is that we, you know, first you have to make the unconscious conscious. because you can think positive, right? But you're still like somehow having all these negative thoughts and feelings. And those are the ones that are producing the hormones of stress, which are addictive. So you just continue to stay in them. So the first step is, I mean, I'm a big proponent of journaling. It's just, what are you thinking? I mean, literally, like, be really honest with yourself. How I really learned that I, had stress, because I would never have just described myself as stressed out, because I thought I had everything under control, right? Because my to-do list was under control, but that didn't mean I had anything under control, because that's what we do. Like, we try to control, that way. But when I really, really was honest with myself, and I started looking at my thoughts when I woke up in the morning, and what would I think of? I think about my to-do list. And I think about, like, oh gosh, I got to call my mom, and I have to do this, and I have to do that. Oh gosh, I got to, oh, it's a little late. You got to hurry up, go walk the dog, or and then go to your spin class. And so what kind of state of being would that put me in? Just 5 minutes.
When you open your eyes, yeah.
It's stress. And so just spend time being painfully honest with yourself about what you do think about. And once you begin to identify that, oh gosh, I'm creating stress for myself. I've, so obviously I've put too much on my plate, or I'm noticing that maybe it's something like, oh gosh, I tried that outfit on last night and it was a little tight, so now I feel fat or whatever, right? All these things, just, they're there, but you never are really, really, really aware that you're thinking that.
Yeah, it comes and it makes you feel like crap, and
right.
It might go away, but it's still, the effects of it are still lingering there.
So if you do say that, like, oh, I feel overweight, I feel chubby, blah, blah, write all that stuff down, because then you begin to see that you're judging yourself, right? So that's, maybe you're addicted to judgment. Maybe you're feeling unworthy. So, and then you begin to think, well, what thoughts would make me feel worthy? What thoughts would not be judgmental? What thoughts would be productive for me? So the first step is knowing what you no longer want, because those are the ones that are creating the hormones of stress, the loop, right? And then figure out a target that you want, because even saying I want to get rid of them, then you don't know what to replace them with. So if I am having an insecure thought and I want to feel like I belong, right? So then I'm just going to basically say, okay, stop that, right? I'm just going to stop that thought. And I'm going to say, how do I really want to feel? And I want to feel like engaged and that I belong, and that process of stopping and targeting, like, is really powerful. And you know what? It requires practice and work. Like, there's no magic bullet or pill, whatever you want to call it. And that, take the bullet out, because that's a very masculine thing, right? There's no magic.
Stop that thought.
Right, exactly. How did I see? I mean, these are, those are the things that I'm catching myself. So we have these turns of phrases that we grew up with that are based on war or very masculine terms. And, I was reading something the other day that, when we say the whole nine yards, well, that was, for a machine gun, was 9 yards long for all the, so I used the whole nine yards, right? So I was like, wow, I will never use that again, because that's like a war term, right? Like,
right.
But we don't even know this. And, I'll take it a step further. I don't know if you've ever read Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall-Kimmerer. She has a chapter in that book, which is called The Language of Animacy. And what she discusses in that chapter is her difficulty at first in learning her native tongue. And because it's nothing like English, right? Mm-hmm. So in our languages, in the Romance languages, we have, I think, something like 70% nouns and only 30% verbs. In the Native American tongues, it's the reverse.
Oh,
so
interesting.
Everything is a doing, right? And so she began to realize that the Native American languages were languages of inclusion, where everything was a being, you know, a blade of grass was a being. And the way that the language worked was that we were all connected. In our languages, we are a language of separation. So us, them, he, she. So at even the most basic level of our language, we've been taught to live in separation.
Wow. That's so interesting.
Isn't that profound? It's just, I don't even know if I would have paid attention to that chapter.
Right.
I would have been like in my old self, in that pre-evolving being who I am now. I wasn't ready. Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many books, and I'm sure you have that too, that I picked up and I was like, oh, I don't even know what this means. And then now I own them and I read them all the time. And it's just that saying is about when the student is ready, the teacher will come. Or I believe that, you know, you just have to be ready. So when we talk about our thoughts, your brain will start to believe that whatever you're thinking is actually real. And then your body starts to feel it. But how do you get past the point of where you feel like you're pretending or fake it to make it type of mentality? How do you get to that place where you don't feel like a fraud?
Trust. It's all about trust, right? So, you know, the practice of clear intention with an elevated emotion. So for me, when I was going through the process of healing my eyes, I would go on long walking meditations frequently, and I just would envision the gene unwinding, right? Like reversing the gene, seeing clearly, and then marrying it to how would I feel when I was healed, and that emotion of joy and freedom and wholeness. And I would just do that every day. And I just trusted that the process works, because the biology and the neuroscience supports it. And and quantum physics is really the game changer, is that modern science has finally caught up to ancient wisdom. You know, by the way, traditional Chinese medicine and all of its teachings with the five element consciousness system is quantum physics. It's all quantum physics. It's about invisible energy. Because the other thing that changed from, at least when I grew up, is that we thought the atom had like a nucleus and all this other stuff. The atom is empty. It's 99.99999% energy. So that means that this us, right? We're only 0.0001 is this. Everything else is energy.
Isn't that crazy though? It blows your mind. If you sit there and think about it too hard, it's like, oh, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense.
Right. But we're now, I believe, being asked to step into the understanding, right? To own our energy, to own that we are energy. So the other concept that you are, I think, alluding to is like where you put your focus is where you put your energy. So that's really what we're directing. And by the way, a thought sends the signal out. It's your emotions that draw the experience back. So that's why you want to have that clear intention. And then if you have the intention that I'm healed, but then I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I'll ever heal. Right? They have to be aligned. You have to have your thoughts and your actions and your feelings all have to be aligned. I always say if your thoughts, words, and deeds are not in alignment, you're going to know it, because you're going to feel a negative.
But when you get diagnosed with something, how in the world? I mean, that's so difficult, I'm assuming, to just be like, I'm just going to trust that everything's going to be fine, when you feel like, oh my gosh, my vision, this is a life sentence.
First, I put a lot of faith in the Western medical model, right? Because I was going to the top specialist in the country. But something bigger was happening in me, right? It was just definitely where, like, why did a shaman show up? Why did I trip into the most amazing acupuncturist? And all of these other things just sort of, it wasn't like I was kind of looking, right? But then what showed up is what I pursued. I guess I just knew. And I guess that's why I wanted to start teaching, because I think that we all have a knowing. I think maybe I finally, because of the diagnosis, I really did wind down my life. And so the other really cool thing, interesting thing happened is that literally when I was just feeling, oh my God, I've spent all my money on heirloom meals and I don't know what I'm going to do now. And, you know, it was working from the external, but not internal. And I get a call from a friend of mine who's actually, she was on Nantucket and she's like, oh, she's like, we're looking for a membership director. She was working for this club out there. And I was like, that is ridiculous, right? And she's like, I think you should interview. She said, I think it would be good for you to come to Nantucket. And so I got off the phone and I told my husband, and he's like, oh, you would love Nantucket. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I'm like, I thought he would have been the same way, right? Like, that's ridiculous. And so I decided, okay, I'll interview and we'll just see where this goes. And anyway, I got hired. And it was interesting because I felt like that was divine on some levels, because like it's not a job I was so overqualified, right? Like it was sort of like, okay, I've been on TV, I've run a major financial firm, I've blah 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 blah, and now I'm Julie McCoy, right? Like I felt like I was and here are the tennis courts. But I tuned in and I was like, this is grace. This is grace. I don't have to worry where my money's coming from. And they paid 100% health insurance. How is that even conceivable, right? Like, so all of a sudden, I have grace. So that I have spaciousness to heal.
Were you religious before all that?
No.
Or
Spiritual, yes.
spiritual? Yeah,
Spiritual.
but not like Jesus take the wheel kind of.
No, I grew up Roman Catholic, and I think I learned early in, probably when I was making my confirmation, we were practicing to do whatever. And
Yeah.
so the Monsignor says, okay, everybody be quiet. And the two kids behind me were talking. So I go, and he goes, you. And he puts me on the other side of the church and tells me I can't make that confirmation. But I was like, wait a second. You're supposed to be the embodiment of love, of Jesus, of God, or whatever, right? You're representing this on earth. And I thought, this is a fraud. And that was it. I think I only went to church because my family went to church, but as soon as I went to college, I was like, done.
Done. Chapter
Let's
closed.
think about it now, and I hope I don't offend anybody, but seriously, coming to, being born with original sin and you spend your entire life trying to get rid of it is ridiculous. We are pure love. And that's probably another conditioning, right? To think like it's like from early on that we're taught that we're bad. Like, and we had to like repent for it our entire lives.
Yeah, undo all of that.
So anyway, I apologize if I offended anybody, but
Everybody
I
has their beliefs.
exactly. And so I love you for them, whoever you are. And but I just truly believe that we are of God, by God, for God. We are all God. You're God, I'm God. And that God shows up for us every day. I mean, they're just people who are God for each other. That is such a beautiful way to live, right? To just see the divine in every being that you come across. It sounds sort of hokey that it's even coming out of my mouth because I still have thoughts like, what a jerk or whatever, right? Like,
Sure, yeah, nobody's perfect.
yeah, I hosted a retreat this weekend, and there was just one woman who I was like, okay, she's getting under my skin. You know this work. She's in a bad place. That's why she's here.
Yeah.
And so, we're always being tested. Like, have you evolved, Carol? Can you be greater than this thought of
Right. And
or
give
having my
somebody else grace. Give
right?
somebody else grace to be annoying. You're so good at it. Stick with what you know.
I also realized that by the end of the workshop that it was just her resistance. She showed up because she knew it would help her, But she was the most resistant of the participants in embracing the work because she's in a defensive place right now. She just lost her job, all this other stuff.
I think it's when we realize that we really are not in control. And that's a really hard thing to let go of, like your to-do lists. And we so want to think that if we can control everything, it will turn out the way it's supposed to. So I'm trying, that's my word for this year is faith. Faith in me not having the steering wheel. It's just going to happen the way it's going to happen. I'm going to try my best, try my hardest, and hope that it's a good outcome. That's all you can do.
Yeah, we turn it over. I mean, I don't know if you know Mike Dooley. He wrote the book called Infinite Possibilities, and I became certified to teach his work too. I just weave it in, right? I don't like just do his whole program. But he has this concept of the GPS, and the GPS is usually the feeling that you want. And so you say you want freedom, joy, you want abundance, whatever it is, feel abundance. And then you take baby steps to move towards there, but you don't try to control every step along the way, because then we potentially limit our potentials. We're trying to drive it into this direction, but just over there is the best thing ever. But because we're over here, we're never going to see that. So you just know how you want to feel and just allow with action steps of our own to start guiding us there, but don't be stuck on our controlling paths that so many of us were taught to do, right?
Well, and it's not always about the destination. I mean, really, the journey is where I get to meet you and I get to meet all these people that give me new perspective. And then I bring that into my life and it all carries through. It's not all about let's just, when are we going to get there? Because the destination, once you hit that, that's it. That's right. The end of the road.
It is. And the thing is, it's, I guess it's Anne Morrow Lindbergh, right? Right. Who wrote, it's the journey, not the destination that matters. And right. I think that is the most profound lesson that we need, and living in the now, right? It's living right now. We're talking, you know, we're both super present. You know, there's that energy that's happened because we are, and that's really the power. Because the thing is, we could have our focus so out there, right, on what we want, and we might miss all the beauty in the gap, right?
Yeah,
and so. It's really, faith. I think I love that's your word, your guide for 2024.
Yeah, just to be receptive and open to whatever happens, because you never know who you're going to learn from. It could be somebody like you, or it could be somebody that bags groceries at the grocery store. I feel like we all have lessons out there. So, oh my gosh. Okay, Carol, what else is in for you? Are you going to write a book? Are you like, what else? Are you good? Are you going to stay doing what you're doing?
Oh yeah, no, I'm in. I have a couple of books in me. I do still plan on writing like a memoir with recipes. So I'm not abandoning the food part. And I do think that I have a lot to say on the topic of self-mastery at this point and healing. So some maybe smallish book around that. And then I want to touch more people. I really want to help people. I mean, like I think I mentioned I had 10 amazing women in a workshop this weekend, and it was so profound. We had an 86-year-old woman who had started a theater company, and her husband died a couple of years ago, and now because of her age, they're like kind of pushing her aside, and she was feeling a lot of grief, but she has so much wisdom, and she left with such clarity. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, she's like, oh, it doesn't have to look the same. Sure. I can create over here. I can, my legacy can live on if I just shifted my perspective. And and she left a completely, but 86 years old, not
that's
giving
wonderful.
Up. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's great. You're never too old to make a difference, to stop learning. You're never too old for any of it. You just have to be open to it. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And then there was just, and I don't just teach women, but guess what? We're the ones who are doing this work. It seems the majority of, you know, even if you go to a Dr. Joe Dispenza workshop, it's like 95% women.
I wonder what he thinks about that. I wonder if he thinks like there should be more guys here.
But interestingly enough, the big teachers are guys, like, you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza. You know, I mean, I don't know if you follow Wim Hof at all. He's that Dutch guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's a male. My Qigong master's a male. Like, my dually male, right? These are
and the authors of a lot of those types of books, Wayne Dyer and like, Neville Goddard and all that. Yeah.
My husband wasn't into it, but he's slowly evolving into it. He says, you know, as a guy, there's a serious breakdown. We don't know where we fit anymore, right? Because there is this like old white guy patriarchy thing going on, right? And then there's all this stuff about quantum, right?
It's belief, not proof or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and he out, you know, he admits it. He said it's a leap for him to, you know, he wants proof. And I said, honey, aren't I proof enough? Right. My eyes, I'm good. Like, I'm driving. I, you know.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. That is wonderful. I'm so happy for you that your eyes are, I mean, I couldn't imagine how devastating that would be to hear that you might not be able to see and things that we all take for granted. So that's wonderful. You got a miracle. I'm happy for you.
So much.
Carol, it was so great talking to you. I seriously could just sit and talk to you forever. This was wonderful. And I wish you the best with all of your stuff. I will get everything into the show notes so people know how they can find you if they want to go to one of your retreats or whatever. But yeah, thank you so much. You're a bright light. And I think it's so interesting, all the different things that you do that brought you to where you are today. I would never consider you a failure in any way.
I'm done with that. That's my old self.
That's old you. Carol. We're not talking about Carol, that old Carol. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I will be in touch.
Thank you so much. Have a good day, Dawn.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.